That's your wasting my breath. There are more no's than yes. Okay. On page 215. On page 215, book 1, 30, we have some of the obstacles to soul cognition. On page 217, I enumerated some of the hindrances. Right? And on page 221, book 212, it says, karma itself has its roots in these five hindrances and the fruition in this life or in some later life. On page 217 we see the hindrances are avidya, sense of personality, desire, hate and the sense of attachment. These differ from the obstacles mentioned on page 215 book 130, which reads, obstacles to soul cognition are bodily disability, mental inertia, wrong questioning, carelessness, laziness, lack of dispassion, erroneous perception, inability to achieve concentration, and the failure to hold the meditative attitude when achieved. The difference between obstacles and hindrances we have noted is obstacles are personal. Your own structure. Hindrances belong to the human race and therefore the genes of these qualities should be in every one of us. Understand me? If hindrances are the weaknesses of the human race, such genes should be in every one of us. He further speaks on page 221 that karma itself has its roots in these five hindrances and must come to fruition in this life or in some later life. It also means that if we have to avoid this, the result of this karmic death, we have to do something. Therefore, the ancient sastras are talking to us. A few thousand years ago, about genetic engineering, that we are talking today in modern science, genetic engineering. And this type of genetic engineering they brought about by certain practices. They did not resort to any operation or to any injection. Thereby, changing the genetic structure, we could change the structure of the karmic death. So, connect up page 215 book 130 to page 217, book 23 to page 221, book 212. These three are to be linked together. First, your personal obstacles. Secondly, the hindrances that you receive from your race, human race. And third, the result of such karmic death, we may have to face certain destiny which can be avoided by certain genetic engineering. You get my point now clear? This was talked about 800 years before the birth of Buddha, which was in 2525 BC. You get my point? What are the hindrances? On page 217, what are the hindrances? These are difficulty producing hindrances. And the first and foremost is avidya. Avidya translated means ignorance. Ignorance does not mean an ignorant state of being. Ignorance here means ignorance of the laws of nature. Ignorance on how to live a balanced and rhythmic life. When we don't lead a balanced and rhythmic life, we create obstacles and hindrances into our own system. That leads to what we call our own structure. And changing of this structure is the basic need and help we get from yoga. It further says, sense of personality. Sense of personality means the idea of I, which we normally have as the physical body. Further it says, desire, hate and sense of attachment. As a human being, we cannot live without desire. But when a desire holds us to an extent that we cannot fight that desire, we are weak enough to succumb to that desire, that is a weakness. And such deeply laid weakness can be a great obstacle. Hate and sense of attachment. Sense of attachment and hate are contradictory. We have a sense of attachment for our dear ones, that is all right. But when we develop a sense of hate, the only damage that takes place is to our health and well-being. It starts with dislike of a person and slowly develops into hate. And the result is that we develop in our body from slight pains and aches to arthritis and paralysis. Therefore, the sastras are not advising us only to become good, because becoming good has no meaning, but to realize the intricate nature of our body-brain system, which, if not kept balanced all the time, can harm no one else but our own self. Yoga Sutras do not philosophize They do not talk about morals and duties and obligations. The entire work from beginning to end is to point out to you that if you do not go by balance and rhythm, the only person to suffer is your own self. The obstacles, the hindrances, they are all mentioned with one deep fact in view, that these are not weaknesses that should be avoided from moral standpoint, but these are weaknesses which your intricately balanced structure will greatly suffer. So we begin from page 221 today. Karma itself has its roots in the five hindrances and must come to fruition in this life or in some later life. Further it says, so long as the roots or sanskars exist, their fruition will be birth, life and experiences resulting in pleasure or pain. These seeds produce pleasure or pain according to the originating cause being good or evil. So all the three, Book 2, 12, 13, 14, they are all interconnected. They are interconnected because our life is interconnected with a series of lives. What if some of you were to question, what is the guarantee that there is a series of life? A past, a present, and a future. If there is no series of life, why do one person or a young boy or girl should get certain ailments at birth so very dangerous to life and well-being? The idea that God does it according to his wishes is not acceptable, because that would mean a God that is biased, a God that wishes to use his free will as he likes. And for that clarity, in the Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, O Arjuna, nobody is my friend, nobody is my enemy. All are equal to me. They who have faith in me come to me. See? That clearly means that there is no partiality from God and nature. So when we are born with certain terrible weaknesses and ailments, it means that we are carrying forward from somewhere. Not only our ailments, but our character, our structure, our well-being, our thinking, our emotions, everything we carry over from somewhere. And this carrying over does not easily end unless conscious, methodical steps are taken. If you think that mere prayers can help you, if you think that japa can help you, I'm very sorry, but it will not help you. For the simple reason that you will not be able to fix your mind on your prayers and on your japa. If you want to test whether your japa or your prayers are very much concentrated and your mind does not wander, go home, stand on one foot and for 5 minutes recite whatever japa you want to recite. In 5 minutes, your other foot will touch the ground. It is a proof that your mind is not concentrated on your japa or your prayer. It takes a few 100 lives for your bhakti to be so effective that your mind will not wander. You get my point? So, there is no easy escape from what you bring with yourself as your structure. There are many who feel that there is an easy way to bhakti. How many people you can count on your fingers who have been great saints, bhakti saints? You won't be able to count them on your one hand finger, because it is not possible to keep the mind steady when you are engaged in bhakti. So it calls for very strong conscious steps. First, to train your mind and your brain into a steadiness, what we call the mental posture. When that is achieved, then prayer, then bhakti can be very, very effective. Therefore, on page 215, you will very clearly see 215, book 130, inability to achieve concentration, and what is worse, failure to hold meditative attitude when achieved. No, the author tells you very clearly that it is not easy to have meditative attitude, but it is not easy to even maintain it if you have reached it. Without these very important steps, nothing will be achieved. And therefore, the most important point in Yoga Sutra would be to achieve concentration. That would be the most important thing. So when we are on page 221, we have to read that the elimination of karma and the result of karma, what I have just told you as genetic engineering, would be to achieve concentration. When I say concentration, I don't mean only that you want, that your mind will not wander. I mean that when you understand the word concentration, when you understand the word dhana, that will be concentration of a very high quality of penetrative concentration. Get my point? Why am I stretching this point to you? In the whole universe, in the whole universe, God and nature has not created anything equal, let go superior, anything equal to the human brain. The human brain is more intricate, is more powerful, than the whole of universe put together. One human brain. But the beauty of this human brain is, it can be as useless as mud. And it is for you, each one of you, whether it will be mud at your feet, or it will be the most brilliant instrument ever created by God and nature in the universe. You understand me? This is the choice before you. Whether your brain would be mud, or whether it would be the most sensitive, superlative instrument created in the whole universe. On this will depend your ability to work any genetic engineering. On page 221, between book 212, 13, 14, we are being told about the results that we get, the results we get because of our ignorance, because of our inability to make our brain better than mud. Our inability to make our brain better than mud. We are not here to be afraid that since we have not made our brain what it could be, there is no future for us. It is not for this type of thinking that we are here. We are here because we know that each human brain today as it is existing can be the most sensitive, superlative instrument that God and nature can make. How can this same brain be what I am trying to describe? Is the genetic engineering that Yoga Sutra wished to teach. The great difficulty between these two states of the brain, mud or a superlative instrument in your hand, between these two states is the normal law of nature that says that you will have to change your structure. Today, this structure goes to such details that one person will like sweets, the other will like chili, the third will like coffee, the fourth will like a cold drink, the fifth will like milk. It goes to such details in our structure. But these are superfluous points of structure, the deeper, the deeper structure is I am a human being. I can't go beyond what I am. This is a normal reflex of a human mind and brain. And therefore, no effort is put in to bring this beautiful instrument of God and nature to come to that state of superlative beauty. Two fourteen, last paragraph on page 222, this human structure of acceptance, which the Shastras call sanskar, rejects all that is not within the spectrum and is bounded on all sides by a particular level of avidya. To break this omnipotent fortress, one has necessarily to upgrade inner awareness. Under the gaze of a high level of inner awareness, all obstacles crumble into dust and all things become known. This is the state of an illuminated person. To the illuminated man, all existence in the three worlds is considered pain owing to the activities of the gunas. These activities are threefold, producing consequences, anxieties and subliminal impressions. Yoga is rhythm and balance in every way. No sooner one achieves it and maintains it, the three qualities come to rhythm and balance. It means one has become equal to chitti itself. Then there is no need for a body-brain system in any of the three universes of bhu, bhuva, swa. The body-brain system merges into chitti and the overpowering force of death is set aside. No more need one cry out at the fate that punishes virtues with defeat, the tragedy that destroys long happiness. The sutra calls for practices leading to conscious death. What is pleasure and happiness to the common person can be pain to the illuminated person. Why? If you pass soft cotton over the whole body, you will feel a pleasant feeling, but touch it to the open eye, however gently, and you will feel acute pain. An illuminated person is similarly different from the ordinary person everywhere. The conditions in the higher stages of bhu, bhuva and swaha, the three worlds, to different persons would appear like high heavens and are referred to as such in the Shastras. The highest, of course, is Indra's heaven. But to an illuminated person, all life in all the three worlds is painful because the activities of the gunas, through their imbalance, is everywhere and one can be caught in their play. See, I am not talking here, I am not interested here in talking about heavens. What I am trying to say is, what the sutra is trying to say is, that as your brain grows forward from the state of mud to that superlative state, you can go from one sub-stage of bhu, bhuva and swaha to a higher sub-stage. Even that is not what is important to us. What is important to us is here and now. Here and now, what can we achieve? We are not talking about the state of high heaven after death. We are talking about the state, physical life as we are here today. And how do we achieve such a state? That is the whole purpose of the Yoga Sutra. The illuminate, that means the one with light in his head, that means with great wisdom and knowledge in his head, Why is the word illuminated? We see the word to the illuminated man. That means when the human brain, which is a high state, superlative state, it has vibrations so high, it has its own light. In that light, all karmic debt is burnt. In that superlative light, all the gunas come to a balance. In that superlative light, all your actions are only based on rhythm and balance. We are all aware. All over the world, yoga is very famous because of asana and pranayama. There are schools and schools all over the world where people learn asana and pranayama. Pranayama is rhythm and asana is balance. But by going through all the 84 pranayams and all the 84 asanas, you cannot achieve rhythm and balance. Rhythm and balance can come to the superlative structure through superlative efforts only. And superlative efforts are not physical nor emotional. I think for 80% of the people here today, the subject is very dry. And for 80%, the preference is for sleep. Book 218. That which is experienced has three qualities: sattva, rajas, tamas, rhythm, mobility, inertia. It consists of the elements and the sense organs. The use of these produces experience and also eventual liberation. This sutra, if read normally, will not convey to you any meaning. This sutra, when you read with the last line first, the use of these produces experience and also eventual liberation. The use of these, what does it mean? The use of these? That which is experienced has three qualities: sattva, rajas, tamas. The use of these produces experience and also eventual liberation. Unfortunately, eventual liberation is understood in India normally as running away to an ashram and becoming a sannyasi. If you run to an ashram and become a sannyasi, then according to this sutra, you do not have the possibility of the use of these produces experience and also eventual liberation. What is enjoined here? What the author wishes to tell us is freedom, eventual liberation is by living here, by by experiencing all the three qualities, by experiencing all the obstacles and hindrances. Unless you face all these obstacles and hindrances, unless you face all the qualities of the three qualities, there is no possibility of eventual liberation. Eventual liberation is not on the Himalayas, or in ashram, or in sannyas. Eventual liberation is living in this world, a normal life, facing all the hindrances, facing all the obstacles, experiencing all the three qualities, and whatever the hardships, whatever the great setbacks we may receive from time to time, it is from these that one can hope for eventual liberation. And if you and I have to live with this world, if you and I have to be a normal person and face all the obstacles and hindrances, what is or are our tools, our armor to fight? Only two. We have only two. Call it weapons, call it tools, and that is rhythm and balance. Under all circumstances, how can we maintain our rhythm and balance? Book 2, 19. The divisions of the gunas, qualities of matter, are fourfold: the specific, the non-specific, the indicated, and the untouchable. There is no end or limit to the play of qualities. It requires typically only three primary colors to create an endless range of colors to fill the whole universe. Go beyond all discussions of the gunas. Rather, create and maintain the rhythm and balance in them for eventual liberation. Chitti, infinite mind, is absolute balance and rhythm of these qualities, and though having them in infinite abundance, it is yet free from their oppression, unlike in an individual. When we talk of internal peace, we are just referring to the rhythm and balance of the qualities within us. Now I would like to take you to the earlier part of the book, page 29, the earlier part of the book. This is the summary of book 1, rearranged. Let us read the summary on page 29. What is meant by chitta? What is the thinking instrument? And what are the respective functions? Are these functions proper? And if not, how does one make them function properly? What is our psychic nature? These themes are subject matter of book 1, rearranged. As long as the functions of chitta and the thinking instrument are not proper, the lower psychic nature cannot be brought under control. The man of matter remains unaware of Ishvara, the inner spiritual man, and so identification of I is with form, personality, and the brain processes. The remedy is control of mind modifications and oscillations of the brain into the past and the future. The methods and the techniques to bring about control are shown, but the efforts should be tireless, unceasing, and a sense of non-attachment must dawn on the individual. When the inner spiritual man, Ishvara, is sufficiently valued, much more than the external objects, and the efforts to that end are followed, the modifications and the oscillations slowly tend to come under control. When sufficient work has been done on oneself, at white hot heat, the qualities tend to balance, and one slowly gains knowledge of the inner spiritual man. The natural obstacles in the course of knowing the inner spiritual man and the attendant consequences, if they are not overcome, are enumerated. To this end, the refining, corrective and upgrading exercises must be practiced, and rhythmic breathing, three-step rhythmic breath, must be established. The difficult producing hindrances for our human race are also enumerated and described. Avidya is identified as the cause of all other obstacles. Due to avidya, prakriti is given preference over purusha, leading to the many and varied confusions. The phase exercises, through the use of three-step rhythmic breath at different cycles, along with earlier preliminary exercises, help one to methodically remove these hindrances and be free from all ill effects created by the obstacles and the various granthis, but application and efforts should be intense and uninterrupted. Desire to live in this world is in every human heart and mind, even in the case of the very wise. This gives rise to the five important hindrances. Memory is sanskar. It is soaked in emotions of past experience. It forms the seeds of future existence, and the result is endless births and deaths. All that exists in all the Brahman and all that is ever experienced by us has three qualities, sattva, rajas, tamas. Normally, tamas and rajas predominate, so all our thoughts and actions will also be ruled by them, creating cause for further existence. To the wholly illuminated individual, life and birth in all the three universes is pain, because in life the three qualities always remain in imbalance, causing pain. For further study, the reader is given here a thought from Light on the Path by Mary Collins, which urges us towards the twofold path recommended in the Gita. The twofold path.
Oh, my God.